Star Trek with Aaron and Polly. Hi, I'm Aaron.
Wait, hold on. What did you just say? Did you say Star Trek with Aaron and Polly?
Yeah, Star Trek with Aaron and Polly. You know, hello and welcome to Star Trek with Aaron and Polly. You know,
but I read comic books this week to talk about comic books.
Oh,
yeah. Oh, this is awkward.
Well, I guess we could talk about comic books, but instead we're going to talk about Star Trek and all things yes. Star Trek.
Well, for those of you who are not aware, we, Aaron and myself, Paul, just in case you don't recognize my voice after 12 freaking years, do have a Star Trek podcast that we record generally when there is a new season of a Star Trek show airing on Paramount Plus. And so you may be listening to this on the Funny Books with Aaron and Polly feed. And if you are and don't like Star Trek, listen to it anyway. Just have play it in the background so that we get the traffic. But if you do like Star Trek, after this episode, go to your favorite podcast provider and look up Star Trek with Aaron and Polly, same way as Funny Books with Aaron and Polly, and subscribe to us there because we will be covering Discovery Season 4 starting November 18th, and then followed by Picard and Strange New Worlds and all sorts of Star Trek goodness.
All that good Star Trek stuff. You can also find the link to our RSS feeds on the IOMgeek.com page. But yeah, go to all of your favorite podcatchers, iTunes or Apple Podcasts, whatever the hell they're calling that thing now, Spotify, Audible, Amazon, all the things. Subscribe to Star Trek There in Apollo. Give us a 5-star review. Send us money. Do all the things.
And then we will see you next week on the Funny Books with Aaron and Polly feed and on the Star Trek with Aaron and Polly feed.
It's very exciting. So many feeds. There's so many
and now,
feeds.
Star Trek.
But why are we so hungry, Paul? Why are we so hungry?
I'm always hungry. That's why I look this way. All right. Star Trek with Aaron and Polly coming now.
Star Trek, our favorite frontier. Are the podcasts of Aaron and Polly, their ongoing mission to explore all things Trek, to seek out cool things and pick them apart, to boldly complain as no one's complained before.
And this is Paul.
And we are back. It has been a very, very long time.
6 months, Aaron. I looked, actually almost 7 months. If you scroll back to our last conversation in Skype, it says Tuesday, March 23rd, 2021. And that's probably the last time we recorded a Star Trek with Aaron and Polly.
That is crazy. I feel bad about that because it's not like there's been an absence of things to talk about in Star Trek. I mean, it's like new Star Trek news comes out every day, but boy, life, you know? things happen and keep us busy. And, you know, we have that other podcast that we do on a more or less weekly basis and
give or take.
Yeah, give or take. And I'm not going to give you any hell about not having edited last week's episode yet, Paul.
No.
I'm not going to give you any hell about that at all.
Last week's episode, 2 weeks ago,
yeah,
we recorded that episode.
And I'm also going to direct you to not look too hardly at the fact that I was 2 weeks late editing the episode prior. So please do not acknowledge the hypocrisy.
All I do is think about the hypocrisy every time we're on the mics.
Well, here,
it's the hypocrite Aaron.
Yeah, that's right. The hypocrisy. But let me distract you. Let me distract you from my hypocrisy. Ooh. Paul, because this is straight in Paul's wheelhouse. There is a Star Trek amusement park coming.
Ooh,
now you're gonna have to go to China.
Oh, do I have to? I guess I have to. Yeah. If I want to go to the Star Trek amusement park, I have to go to China. Why is there a Star Trek amusement park coming to China?
Well, apparently and it's gonna be in Kunming, China. And they are opening like a 683-acre amusement park in which there'll be a Star Trek land or zone or sector. And it's a big deal with this Chinese company and Paramount for the funding. There'll be a Paramount resort there and what? other Paramount type of themed activity. So the other areas of the park would be Paramount Boulevard, which I'm going to guess is like, you know, walking through the
port of entry kind of thing.
Yeah. Or, a screening, the old Paramount history of silver screen stuff.
Yeah.
Paramount Boulevard, Adventure City. So, maybe an Indiana Jones thing. I don't know.
Yeah. Disney has Indiana Jones.
Oh, you're right.
I think, but I think you've got, your Mission Impossible and your Tomb Raider. They're Paramount type thing.
Wonderland. A Peanuts area like Charlie Brown and a Dinotopia area.
Interesting. Dinotopia.
But you and I, Paul, you and I frequently lament the passing of Star Trek Las Vegas, where you could go to the Star Trek experience, which was just a magnificent experience. I listened to a podcast recently that had the designer of the Star Trek experience on, and they talked about how they developed it and whatnot. And, one of the things that I thought was so magnificent, and this is adjacent to the amusement park because of the ride, but when they did the transporter where they transport you up from Vegas to the Enterprise, you felt like something was happening to you, right? It's not just the sound effects and the light, but there was that massive whoosh, where you felt literally transported. That was the air effect, that whooshing, that sudden, burst of air was not intended. That was a happy accident, because what they did is they built a fake set around you that they lift up super fast, which causes the air to get sucked out, which is what you're feeling. And it was just a happy accident. It's like, wow, we weren't planning for that, but isn't that great?
That's funny.
Yeah.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
There is actually a Star Trek escape room in Las Vegas.
I saw that. That looks great.
Yeah, it's a Star Trek Discovery themed escape room. If you're curious, it's escapology.com. Uh-huh. Las Vegas Town Square, it's Star Trek Discovery, Star Trek Quantum Filament. It says it has a difficulty of 9 out of 10, so I would not escape.
you would die there in the room.
I would just die. I'd still be there. We wouldn't be having this podcast because I'd be dead. They've got a whole trailer on it, and it's heavily themed. It's official. It's not like just some...
Oh, it is licensed.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Yep. It is an officially licensed escape room. So pretty cool. And I mean, they seem really, really to dive into the theming, very well. And I've been to both good escape rooms and not good escape rooms.
Right.
And this one seems very Vegas-y.
It was the bad escape room your first marriage?
Yeah, but I did escape.
Because
that one, not a difficulty of 9 out of 10.
That's great.
Star Trek Amusement Park. So when is that Star Trek Amusement Park opening?
I don't think they've got an ETA on date yet, because they haven't even broken ground.
Ah, okay, so don't buy your plane tickets yet,
or buy your season pass.
Well, I mean, they're probably selling them right now to make that money.
So here's my gripe. Because you knew I wasn't going to come into this without a gripe.
No, I thought you were.
I deeply loved the Star Trek experience in Vegas. I loved the museum. I loved Quarks. I loved, walking around the promenade. I deeply enjoyed the ride. I never got the opportunity to do the Borg experience that they had, but that trip to the USS Enterprise, riding in the space shuttle, walking around the bridge, all of that was fan-frickin-tastic, and I did that like 3-4 times while I was there. I am not an amusement park guy. You are certainly the roller coaster man among us.
Yes, sir.
But I would deeply love going to a Star Trek themed amusement park. I haven't been to, Galaxy's Edge yet for Disney. I am going to go, after, the world calms down a little bit. But if they had a Star Trek theme park here in the States, I would have been there during pandemic. I mean, that is, you know, Star Trek is such my jam, and I just hate it is such a curious absence here in the States that there is not a Star Trek amusement park. There is, you know, a Star Trek themed ride in Germany, and now they're going to do this thing in China, but yet we have nothing, Paul, here in the States, and it drives me crazy.
Yeah, it's a bummer, right? I mean, but I think it's just, for lack of a better way of saying it, it's not a guaranteed, you know, money generator. You know, Paramount had their hand, which is, you know, the fact that they're building a Paramount amusement park in China is funny because at one point Paramount owned most of the Cedar Point, mm-hmm. I think, parks. Maybe it's not Cedar Point, but Cedar Fair parks, like King's Dominion, Carowinds, you know, things like that. And they had Star Trek rides and Paramount themed rides like, you know, I think that the time Paramount had James Bond and, you know, Mission Impossible and Italian Job. I remember that, right? Tomb Raider. And so they had a lot of those things, but I think Paramount got out of the, you know, the amusement park game for a little while. So it's interesting to see them get back in. Hopefully it's a success and they'll figure out a way to bring it into the United States.
Yeah, because maybe this is a proof of concept thing, right? Maybe they're saying, well, yeah, let's try it out in China. I don't know why China is the place, but let's try it out here. And if it works there, then we go big in the States. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But, you know,
I think there's a lot of investment right now in, you know, in Chinese theme parks. And I don't know why. Like I said, maybe it's because you know, there are Chinese investors looking to get into the game.
Well, and most of the people in the world are in China.
Well, there's that. Like, there is that little thing. But I find us, you know, but admittedly, I don't know how Chinese, you know, culture embraces the amusement park. You know, embraces amusement parks. Like, obviously, right, American culture does, but we've got Disney.
Right.
But I'm curious how China has embraced, you know, rides and amusement parks and themed entertainment like that. But, you know, at the same time, I'm looking forward to hearing more about it closer to opening. And, certainly seems like a good reason to go to China.
Yeah, that and the dumplings. But, you know, I really want to immerse myself in Star Trek again, like the Vegas experience, and I hope it's successful, and I hope that they do something, because, you know, Paramount's got some great properties, you know, some great content that they own to make amusement park rides and experiences out of, like Mission Impossible. I mean, I would think that a Star Trek and Mission Impossible themed areas would do well. You know, they also have the Tom Clancy books. So you could do, I mean, you know, you think about Pirates of the Caribbean. Well, think about Red October. You know, you could do a really cool sub thing. I think there's a lot there, and I'd like to see that come along.
Well, and Paramount owns, they own Nickelodeon,
right?
Yeah, you can. They own Yellowstone. You can have your Yellowstone.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Plenty, you can get plenty of big stuff.
You can get those nice milkshakes that are mostly vodka there. So,
and there is so much coming down the pike. You know, as far as Star Trek, they seem to really be investing in not just TV, but we've got some movie at some point coming.
That's right. You know, the original announcement was that Matt Shackman from I'm drawing a blank on what Matt Shackman did. He's set to direct. Did WandaVision. That's where he's from. So, you know, Matt Shackman was scheduled to direct a Star Trek movie to be released in June of 2023 with a script written or co-written by the Captain Marvel screenwriter, Geneva Robertson Dwarette, I think is her last name. But it got pushed same year, but in December. So putting it, you know, as a Christmas release instead of a summer release. And, you know, a lot of the Star Trek movies have enjoyed Christmas releases. So, you know, it's still, you know, Christmas is as big a release period as the summer is. So, you know, it's good to see that we've got dates established. But, you know, they haven't started production yet. It's the same conversation that we had over on the Funny Books podcast about Dune.
Yeah.
You know, it is really hard to promise a date 2 years out when you haven't started shooting on one of these big damn movies. You know, Dune was, Dune 2021 was a great big movie. I mean, you know, lots of just, you know, beautiful shots and special effects and what all. And I would expect, you know, given the importance that Paramount is putting on the Star Trek film, that it's going to be just as big as one of the JJ movies. And that takes a long time to produce right. So I'm a little concerned that, you know, there's no casting. We don't know. No one's been announced. There's no shooting date. I mean, because they got to start shooting pretty damn fast to make that date. So I'm a little concerned about that, but I am happy that they're moving forward. What we don't know is who the cast is going to be, or who the crew is. You know, is this going to be a cast of characters that we know, or is it going to be something completely different? I've still got my fingers crossed, Paul. And look at me, I'm going to make a call back to our previous Star Trek with Aaron and Polly episode. I've got my fingers crossed that it's James Bond in Starfleet. That, you know, it's going to be a show that combines a lot of the previous Treks. We see a lot of familiar characters and cameos. And, you know, it winds up being a super spy inside Starfleet. That's what I'm hoping for.
You know, I mean, that would be something different. It would be something that I think would draw people to the franchise a little bit more than your standard crew, and help differentiate it from the TV shows, right? Like,
yeah,
at this point, we will now have three TV shows going that all feature a crew on a starship flying through space. So perhaps, you know, maybe something more focused on an individual hero character. You know, a super spy, you know, working for Starfleet or something like that, you know, would lend itself to something a little bit different.
Well, I do feel that, you know, in order for a Star Trek film to be successful, it has to be great big. It has to be high stakes. And, you know, it's got to be more action than science fiction. Right. I mean, that's why, you know, Star Trek 2009 was so successful, is that, you know, it really sort of ignored the Star Trek model of television stories. Because, you know, Star Trek, the motion picture, is very much a Star Trek story. Right. Yeah. It's very cerebral. It's, you know, there's a lot of big questions and not a fuck ton of action. People want popcorn movies when they go see a movie in the theater. And I think it's important to the franchise that this is how you get new people in. And as long as we're telling, you know, real Star Trek stories on television, I'm fine with a popcorn movie every couple of years. I hope that is where they're going, because, you know, I want the franchise to be healthy. I want new blood in. I want people to come for the popcorn, stay for the stories, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful.
Yeah. Me too. I guess we'll, you know, with right now with movies, you know, the Marvel way of and Disney, you know, looping up so much of the release date calendar, I can see why movies are basically now like, oh, we're going to come out 2 years from now, you know, reserving that release date structure so that they can just call dibs on it. 2023 is a long way away, and with it being 2023, it is probably not even filming until next summer. But hopefully, you know, we'll get some announcements over the next. Actually, you know what? We'll probably get an announcement by the time Star Trek Mission Chicago.
That would be my guess. Yeah, we'll at least get some casting announcements, maybe.
Yeah. So, and I think that's what, next May, next something.
In Chicago is April, I think.
April. Okay.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a lot of Star Trek out right now. And, you know, we're back to making Star Trek movies. Paramount has said that, you know, movies are important to them, and that they're important to the franchise, and that this is just going to be the first of more. What those movies are, we don't know, but we know there are a lot of scripts out there, and we've talked about that previously. But, you know, there's also a ton of Star Trek television now, new original content. And one of the things went after Nemesis, and, you know, Star Trek was lying fallow for a long period of time. The novels, you know, the Star Trek novels started getting the liberty to tell stories post Nemesis, you know, and continue on the franchise, because, you know, the thought was we're never coming back to these characters. And so, you know, is the further adventures of Captain Sisko and the Deep Space Nine cast, you know, season eight and beyond of that, and seasons, you know, umpteen of Next Generation, you know, telling the stories of all of these crews, including Voyager, etc. Well, with the advent of Star Trek Picard, the history of the future has changed. And it no longer lines up with what was in the novels. And the writers of those Star Trek novels, because, you know, it was a finely curated set of novels telling those stories, you know, in this sort of shared universe. And you'd have, you know, characters moving on to roles that you would never expect. Like the one that I always bump on is Esri Dax moves on to captain her own ship. And, you know, she does not strike me at all as someone who should be, you know, leading people. But, you know, you had some really great stories there, like the stories that included Garak were fantastic. In fact, the most recent book by Una McCormick, I cannot remember the title of the book, but it is amazing. Deeply enjoyed that book. But Dayton, guys like Dayton Ward and other, you know, David Mack, etc., are writing, had been writing these novels. Well, they made the decision that instead of just saying, okay, none of that ever happened, and, you know, calling it Star Trek Legends, like Star Wars did when they decided that their books were no longer canon, they have decided to write three connected novels, so a trilogy, to wrap it all up and reset the universe. So, you know, clearly the story is going to involve all of these, you know, characters and their journeys getting reset. So it'll be an in-universe solution, right? And so I read the first of these three novels. It is called Moments Asunder, the Star Trek Coda, book one of three by Dayton Ward. And, you know, it involves the Enterprise under the command of Captain Picard. It involves Esri Dax commanding her ship and others. And I think the book, you know, the book is clearly setting up that the villains, the bad guys, who sadly harken back to that horrible Next Generation two-parter where they go back and meet Mark Twain. Do you remember that one?
Yeah.
It's awful. Do you remember that there were these time-traveling aliens that were involved? And I forget what they're called. But it's a terrible two-parter. It was a terrible story. And they're the big bad guys, you know. And they are – this is an alien race that are out there consuming universes, you know, like alternate universes, et cetera. And they're coming for ours. And so, you know, our heroes have to fight these guys. And, you know, it really telegraphs this is how the universe gets, reset. And that's bothersome in that, you know, you're going to have to read three novels to get to that point, right? It does include a time-traveling Wesley Crusher, because remember, he is a traveler and has special powers. So he figures prominently in it. And there are things I really like about the book, and there are things that I just sort of chuckle about. You know, have you ever read a Larry McMurtry novel, Paul?
I don't know that I have.
Well, you know, he wrote Lonesome Dove and many other.
Oh, yeah, yeah, you know, yeah. Okay, sorry. Yes.
Yeah. Many other wonderful books. But there is a point in Lonesome Dove, and, you know, Lonesome Dove is a great big giant book. And there is a point in Lonesome Dove where you can feel the author realize the story that he's telling and just starts killing off all the unnecessary characters. I mean, they just start dropping like flies. I mean, and that happens in this book because I feel like the author was like, okay, we are not going to have time to focus on these characters that we have told stories about for the last 15, 20 years in the novels. So we just have to kill them off so we can clear the deck. And I mean, it is, I'm like, oh my God, it's a bloodbath. I was a little amused by that, but I mean, you know, if you're a fan of some of these characters, I could, and you know, there have literally been books written about these guys throughout this, this ongoing story. I can only imagine how frustrated I would be if the guy dies like a bitch, like he dies like, you know, Blofeld in the No Time to Die film. I mean, you know, I was surprised by how cavalier some of these characters died. So anyway, I feel like the first book was a little uneven. Okay. I don't know. I will be reading the second and third.
I was about to ask, will you continue?
Yeah, I will. I'm the second's already out. I haven't picked it up yet, but you know, I thought the first book was good enough. It suffers from some of the things I think a lot of these more current Star Trek novels suffers from, and that's that they're, you know, they don't write directly to the story and they plug in a lot of subplots that I don't need. Mm-hmm. I wish that they would just distill it to the story. You know, sometimes you don't need a B story. You know, sometimes let's just stay on A, you know. Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's too much of writing it like it's a Star Trek episode or that it's a Star Trek movie. Just write a good story. And, you know, deviate from that, because I don't need the B and C stories a lot of times, unless your B and C story is compelling. But I found myself a lot like, oh my God, we're with this character again. God damn it. You know, and, you know, I always reflect back, you know, I don't think James Patterson is a great writer, but he is certainly a successful writer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the things he said is, I tried not to write those parts people skip through. And I wish there would be a little bit more of that in this book. But yeah, I'll pick up the rest because I want to see how it ends. I have followed this timeline through the novels, and I'll be really curious to see how it ends. I hope my prediction is not what the ending winds up being, but you know, I'm gonna read my way through it.
Okay. Well, speaking of reading material, you're also reading Star Trek Mirror War from IDW.
Yeah. I am.
I bought the first issue. I have not read it yet.
You
would think I would have before attending a Star Trek podcast, but I didn't.
I enjoy the book. But we never saw the Next Generation cast in a Mirror episode. And so, you know, the fun of this is to see how those characters come across. And the character, the thing that I object to in the way they're telling the Next Generation stories, and it's been true of the previous iterations of this story, and it's certainly true in Mirror War, is that I find the Next Generation crew to be largely incompetent. You know, I don't understand why anybody, other than the fact that Picard is a bully and has the power to back it up, I don't know why anybody would follow him. You know, I know that, you know, we're all supposed to be mustache twirling villains, but there should be something compelling about your leader who has succeeded to a level he has. And that's what I find frustrating, is that, you know, the characterizations for the most part are very cartoonish. And I wish that there was a little bit more nuance, you know, like in the Deep Space Nine episodes. I thought they did a remarkable job with the Mirror Voyager story, but we only got one of those. You know, I wish that, you know, we would spend a little more time with the characters and, you know, make them people that, not admirable, but understandable as to how they have succeeded as well as they have.
Yeah.
So that's been my objection, though. We do finally, you know, Worf shows up. And so I enjoyed Worf in the Deep Space Nine episodes, and I'm hoping I'll enjoy him here. So I'm two issues in, and I'm not sure. I think issue three comes out next month. So
okay, how many is it, a 6-issue series?
I believe so.
Oof, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll wait for your final review.
I generally enjoy the Star Trek books produced by IDW Publishing, and you know, I know I've said this before, but year five for Star Trek, telling the, you know, finishing out the 2 years of the 5-year mission that we never got to see on TV is fucking brilliant. I got to tell you, the last several issues of year five, I felt it in the heart. I mean, it was so good, such a strong wrap up. And I got to tell you, I think part of the good news is, if you're not somebody who wants to go and buy those in trade paperback or in single issue form, IDW has been putting most of the Star Trek content out there on Comixology Unlimited. So if you're an Unlimited subscriber, at some point you'll get to read the entire run. But years 4 and 5 just get better and better book by book. I deeply enjoyed it. And it really creates the case for why Spock left Starfleet to go pursue the Kolinar. It really tells the story of, you know, Kirk's choice to go, you know, take a desk job. It really puts all the characters in their right places prior to Star Trek the Motion Picture. It's so good. So good. I cannot speak highly enough about Star Trek Year 5.
Okay. Well, you know, of the three things we've spoken about right now, we're I don't know. I was about to make a we're batting analogy, but I don't know the numbers. We're 1 for 3. We're 1 for 3.
That's right.
As far as enjoyment level, but you know, we've got some more to talk about. And there's a lot of Star Trek on TV right now that we're going to talk about.
It is crazy how much Star Trek content there is out there right now.
Yeah.
I am a big fan of documentaries. I'm a huge fan of Star Trek documentaries, and there is a new series, a 10-episode series of Star Trek documentaries from the History Channel called The Center Seat. And Paul, it's produced by the same guys that brought us The Toys That Made Us.
Oh, the Nacelle Company or whatever?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Okay. And you haven't watched an episode yet, have you?
Not yet. Well, you know, and so History Channel is only available like through cable, right?
Correct.
Okay. I didn't know if the History Channel was available on one of the streaming services.
Well, they have their own streaming service. In fact, I understand, like the first 4 episodes will run on the History Channel, and then the remaining 6 will stream exclusively on their service.
Ah, oh, come on.
I'm doing this. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Because I am not buying a History Channel streaming service. I think it's like $5 a month. But I'm just – that is so not going to happen because I don't need that much Hitler in my life. You know? Yeah. I just don't. But the first episode focuses on the original series. And what I really liked about it, number one, it's narrated by Gates McFadden, and who has a producer credit. And there is a companion podcast that goes along with it by the showrunner. And he made very clear, he said, look, you know, Gates has a producer credit on the show, and that is not a vanity credit. She worked her ass off on this show. In fact, he was like, we got a lot of the interviews because Gates picked up the phone and coordinated those interviews. Because, you know, they were able to trade on her good name, right? And able to leverage her friendships. He's like, we never would have gotten Brent Spiner for this. We never, you know, he was just running down the names for people that they would not have gotten had it not been for Gates picking up the phone. Now, I listened to her podcast called, what is it called? It's called Gates McFadden. Who Do You Think You Are? I think is what it's called. And she interviews all of her Star Trek friends. And it is not what I would call an oral history of Star Trek because they rarely talk about Star Trek. It's generally talking about, you know, their other interests. One of the most disturbing episodes was her interview with Nana Visitor, who, you know, Paul, you and I deeply love Nana.
I don't know that we share the love, but you certainly love her.
I believe you are also quite enamored with Ms. Visitor.
not to the extent that you are, but we'll discuss that in another episode.
I never knew that she was sexually assaulted. She was, you know, she describes this terrible, terrible thing that happened to her years ago. And I'm just like, I don't know. It was such a horrible experience that she described, and I'm not going to repeat it here. But I'm like, I don't know how a person heals from that. And she has gone. I mean, to hear her talk about it, you know, she talks about the pain and how awful it was and how she carried on. It was horrific in the telling, but the thing that I found so remarkable about it was the healing, and I was listening to somebody. It was an experience unlike any I've ever had before. I got to tell you, I highly recommend it. But if you're squeamish, don't listen. I mean, I, I it really gave me a very different perspective on healing and, you know, accepting the awful things that happen to you. And it just gave me an additional appreciation, you know, for Nana Visitor. That someone can have gone through what she went through and still remain such a positive person is amazing to me. Because I think that if something like that happened to me, I would not be a friendly person. I don't think that I would be able to, you know, see the glass half full, to see the brightness and positivity in the world. And I just really admire her ability to move through that. Long way of me saying that the Gates McFadden podcast is really great, but it is not Star Trek centered. It just talks to the people who have been part of Star Trek and talks about their lives and experiences beyond Star Trek. But getting back to the Center Sea, I've watched two episodes so far. There was the first one about the original series, and really spends a lot of time talking about how influential and how important Lucille Ball was to the creation of Star Trek. Not that she created the idea, but she was the one who championed it so that it would get produced. And it talks about the amount of money and commitment that Desi Lu made to Star Trek. What I thought, you know, there are so many stories about the making of Star Trek that we've all heard a bazillion times before, and they don't spend much time on any of that. They really try to go down the road of the stories you haven't heard.
That's good.
And I really enjoyed that. But I got to tell you, the thing that I enjoyed the most was episode 2, and it was an entire hour on the animated series. Because those are the stories you haven't heard. And that's really what they wanted to do, is they didn't want to retread the tire. They wanted to share those things that people aren't familiar with. And the spending an entire hour on the animated series just thrilled me. It is fantastic. And the companion podcast that goes with it, even more things you've never heard before. So if you are a Star Trek fan, and I assume listening to a Star Trek podcast, you probably are, the Center Seat. It is really good. And seek out its companion podcast. It also is really good. I enjoyed both a great deal and learned more about, you know, people who were involved in Star Trek, you know, where I felt like I had known everything there was to know about DC Fontana. I got to hear stories about her that I'd never heard before. And that's pretty impressive when you're somebody who eats, breathes, and sleeps Star Trek like I do.
I mean, you're on a Star Trek podcast. You host a Star Trek podcast and you learned new things.
Exactly. It's crazy, right?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Well, I'm going to check it out. In fact, while you were talking, I just looked and I downloaded the History Channel app. Ugh, another freaking app. But it appears I'm able to access the content, at least the current content on it, for free because I have cable. So I'm able to access the content using my cable subscriber.
There you go.
Now, that being said, I don't know if that's true, you know, after episode 4, but at least right now, episode 1 looks like it's on there until December 12th, and episode 2 looks like it's on there until December 19th. So it looks like the episodes are limited run on the app.
Gotcha.
So I will endeavor to watch them during that time period.
So, Paul, you know, we've got 3 new Star Trek series coming at us. Coming at us fast, Paul. I mean, they're closing at like warp 9, right?
Whoa, crazy.
I mean, we are looking down the photon tubes of Star Trek Discovery landing on us on November 18th. You know, we're recording.
By the time you're listening to this podcast.
That's right. I mean, yeah, we are recording on Sunday, November 14th. And I know that because I'm looking at my little calendar thing here on the computer. But, you know, just 4 days away from, you know, a brand new season of Star Trek Discovery. And hot on the heels of that, we know that Star Trek Picard is coming in February of next year. And while we don't have a firm date for Strange New Worlds, the show that I am so looking forward to, we know that it's going to be spring of 2022. I think we heard that officially last week from Paramount executives. So I'm very excited, Paul. I'm very excited.
I am too. I'm assuming they're just going to hammer out one after another, right? Discovery season four was probably your 8 to 10 weeks, and then following that, Picard, following that, Strange New Worlds, I would imagine.
Well, you know, the promise has always been that we would have new Star Trek every quarter, and I think they're finally getting there. I think the ability to produce animated content allows them to really, you know, make that promise real.
Speaking of which, you know, we've got Prodigy that started recently. I think there are 4 episodes as of the time of this recording out on Paramount Plus. I've only seen the first 2-parter.
Yep, same. That is what I have seen. So
Aaron, go ahead.
I was going to ask what you thought. I'm going to beat you to the punch, Paul. What'd you think of Star Trek Prodigy?
So you're just all about the pronunciation today. So let me start off by saying Star Trek Prodigy is a gorgeous show from a, you know, computer generation aspect. The animation is gorgeous. The colors are bright and pop off the screen. It is really well produced. I very much enjoyed it. The first 2-parter, very much enjoyed it. However, at least, and keep in mind, again, this is just me watching the first 2-parter. This is a Star Wars show.
It is. Yeah,
not I'm a saying, Star Trek show.
Same. I mean, in fact, there are some, beyond the setting, right, which feels very Star Wars-y, the design elements seem like a direct ripoff. I mean, Dreadnought looks like General Grievous.
Yeah, exactly like General Grievous with the arms and everything. The thing about Star Trek Prodigy, and you know, you could tell this from the initial designs, is it is very much I don't know a better way to say it other than it's so heavily influenced by Star Wars. Star Wars Rebels specifically, both in the character design, in the way the characters act. And I think one of the things that kind of reinforces that is that so many of the aliens in the show are not alien species we are familiar with.
Right.
From the Star Trek lore. So, you know, they inject all these new alien life forms and droids and things like that, you know, a way that we've not really seen in Star Trek, that we haven't seen giant rock people. I mean, we have, but, you know, like, you know, like the rock people and the General Grievous guy and some of the characters we've seen, very few of them have we seen in Star Trek.
Well, and
like, they even have the little kitty person.
Right. Well, and for me, the thing that seems so Star Wars-y is all of the droids, you know,
lots of droids.
Yeah. And I'm calling them droids because that's what we call them in Star Wars. But, you know, there some of the design of the robots look almost exactly like some of the, you know, robots that we saw in Phantom Menace and the Clone Wars. I was just like, you know, you're really aping a style here. And yeah. I mean, when Dreadnought comes on screen, I'm like, holy fuck. It just seems so derivative. Whereas the rest of it, I mean, I just don't understand how some of that stuff made it through editing. Unless the intent was, let's speak in a language that the kids who enjoy Clone Wars will also enjoy our show.
And I think that was the intent, right? I think they very much were trying to ape the style of Rebels and Clone Wars. Because this fall, at least, again, I've only seen the first 2-parter. Maybe episodes 3 and 4 are a bit more Star Trek-y. Mm-hmm. But at least that first 2-parter, if that was indicative of the style of the show, it's a Star Wars show, and it is meant to appeal to that audience. Now, one of the things I will say, it is a lot less kid-centric than I expected. Now, what I mean by that is, it is definitely more Star Wars, you know, Clone Wars and Rebels than it is like SpongeBob It definitely leans all ages, not just for kids. I should say that's probably a better way of saying it.
Yeah, I recognize how pretty it is, and I there are some character designs I really like. Like I really enjoy the character Rock Talk, who is a Brickar from the Peter David Star Trek novels. And I wonder if, you know, I assume that was work for hire and that Peter David's not getting any sort of cash out of that. But, you know, and I enjoy the Medusan character. And I, you know, I like the appearance of the Tellarite. I like a lot of the things in the show, and I'll speak specifically to the two-part. For me, I was really frustrated that I had to wait till all the way to the end to see Janeway, because that was really why I came. But this show isn't written for me. This show isn't produced for me. I'm already a fan. This is about bringing in new fans. This is about Paramount, harvesting new viewers to Star Trek. And I get that. This show is so not for me. That said, I thought the music was beautiful. I thought the art design and art direction were gorgeous. It is an all-ages show. It is a, you know, show written for someone who's, you know, somewhere between 8 and 12 years old. And as such, I'm not very interested in it. I haven't sought out another episode of this show. I think it's great that Star Trek is doing this. I think that's exactly what Star Trek needs to do, because they have been making movies for guys my age, and they've been making television for guys my age for a long time. And, you know, you've got to bring in new fans. And I think Star Trek has proven over the years that it's big enough to tell different kinds of stories. That it's a great big tent we've got here in Star Trek. And it goes back to the core concept of EDIC, you know, infinite diversity and infinite combinations. That is where we thrive. You know, let's bring in more fans. So I'm glad that it's here. I'll probably watch the rest of it when it's all available, you know, probably on a day that I have the flu or something, you know, but it's not appointment television for me.
Agreed. It's not appointment television, but I did enjoy it. I will watch these next two episodes probably soon. You know, I'm curious now that Janeway pops up in the last few seconds of the show. I'm kind of, you know, I want to see the next two episodes. I want to see how it looks. But yeah, like you said, it is not one that I, at least currently, and I could be wrong because I felt the same way about Star Wars Rebels and Star Wars Clone Wars in their first seasons. They were not appointment television for me until they found their footing,
right,
and had a mythology and a story they were building up to. And I feel like if Prodigy can get there, you know, by the end of the first season, or hopefully, I think it already has been renewed for season two.
Well, and
as they get into season two, that'll help.
And that just came out. You know, the first season is 20 episodes, and they had a 20 episode order going in, and now they've got another 20, so it'll be 40 episodes. I mean, that's a lot of story.
That is a lot of story. And so, that's lengthy, but it is. Know.
And so they're breaking up this first chunk. So I think they're running five before Christmas, and then they're going to run five after Christmas. And they're doing 10 episode arcs. And so this first chunk of story will be done after the first 10 episodes. So I think that's interesting, you know, and I think that really kind of, you know, we might call it a season in 20 episodes, but I think that really winds up being two seasons and how they're probably going to break it up. Two seasons within, you know, a 12-month period, you know, kind of like the way they do some of those reality shows. But, you know, I think that it is very promising that, you know, Paramount feels strongly enough about it that they've, you know, given it a 40 episode buy. And I think the big question will be, do they just stick with those 40 episodes, or will they, you know, go for another chunk after that? Because, you know, we know kids will watch things, you know, an infinite number of times.
Yeah.
Will they feel the need to, you know, produce an additional season after that?
Guess we'll see.
Yeah.
Next time we chat, I'll report in on Prodigy episodes 3 and 4. But since we last spoke, since it's been almost 7 months, the entirety of Lower Decks season two has come and gone.
So, Paul, I think that some of our listeners might have, you know, wonder, you know, why we haven't spoken, right? And I got to tell you, it has been a rough summer for me. Not just from work, because, you know, work is always, you know, challenging, but without going into too much detail, my wife recently had a diagnosis of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and so we have been, you know, focused on that. And I got to tell you, you know, I just haven't felt the desire, you know, to get into Star Trek. And what was funny is it dawned on me, you know, as I was, you know, trying to bring myself back to Star Trek, is that Star Trek's my happy place. And I had forgotten that. And that's it was a weird sort of realization for me that I had been avoiding Lower Decks because I felt there was a part of me that felt like I shouldn't be committing time to something like that, that I shouldn't be committing time to, you know, watching a cartoon show. And I, you know, one evening I sat down and said, I'll watch the first episode. And I loved it. And it brought me so much joy. And as I'm kind of burning through season two of Lower Decks, I came back to that realization that, you know, Star Trek is that thing that has always been there for me, that it is that thing that, you know, when I am going through my worst times, Star Trek has been there for me as a bright spot. And I do not hear this in my voice that something terrible is happening with my wife. Everything's going great. Treatment's going well. It's just very stressful. And, you know, and immediately from burning through Lower Decks, I went and I read that Star Trek novel and I read the Star Trek comic and I've been rewatching Star Trek. And I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot. Star Trek's my happy place. Yeah. And so I want to be, you know, open and candid about this, that Star Trek is more than just an entertainment for me. Star Trek brings me a ton of joy. And Lower Decks in particular, beyond the fact that it's funny, but the fact that it is produced by talented writers and artists who love the same thing I love, brings me that much more joy. Follow that up, Paul.
I'm trying to figure out, you know, was it still your happy place when the Mugato started jacking off in that one episode, or did that just kind of like taint it for you?
No, very much my happy place. You know, there is an episode in which our friends there in the Lower Decks drive a dune buggy through the space station. And I was like, you know what? This is a better scene than Picard driving his dune buggy in Nemesis. There is so much more reason for it, and it's more enjoyable, and it's better shot. And I'm like, how is it that 5 minutes on Lower Decks, you know, is a better use of that element than what they did in the John Logan written Star Trek Nemesis? I was like, once again, everything's better than Nemesis.
Lower Deck season two. Now, you know, I mentioned the Mugato scene. There were a couple of moments where I felt it bordered on a bit too raunchy and I'm no prude, but it's Star Trek. And sometimes it's like when it feels not Star Trek to me, I'm like, like there was a moment with the Mugato, and then there was like a scene where like there's like an orgy scene in one of the episodes as well. And I'm like, I probably could have done without that. It bordered on Orville more than it felt like Lower Decks to me. And it's one of the reasons one of the main negative things I have to say about Orville is, you know, sometimes they just delve too much into the sex stuff for a show that's supposed to be enamored with the love of Star Trek.
Yeah.
But other than that, I thought Lower Decks season two was brilliant. I thought the season finale was amazing.
Yeah.
I loved everything about other than, you know, other than the affirmation stuff. I thought Lower Decks season two was fun. You know, to our comments about appointment TV, Lower Decks is not appointment TV, but you will never leave a Lower Decks episode feeling bad.
I agree. I you know, there is so much to enjoy about Lower Decks, and it's not just comedy. You know, there's actual relationships going on. You know, I love that we got Shaq back. I love that we don't talk about that. I loved the explanation of how Boimler comes back from the Titan. The fact that,
that was great. Right?
The fact that there is a transporter copy of Boimler, just like there's a transporter copy of Riker out there, and you know that the Boimler copy seems to be better than the original.
and got to stay on what was Riker's ship?
The Titan.
The Titan got to stay on the Titan. Yeah. Chris Boimler got transferred back to the.
I very much enjoy Star Trek Lower Decks. I think it's a really good show, and it makes me laugh even when I don't feel like laughing. It was a really good show. I dug it. I dug it a lot.
Well, and I think one of the things they dove into in the season finale, which they hinted at in the first season finale, is kind of like, no, we're actually building on these relationships, and we're actually building a story. And they had the benefit of knowing they were coming back for another season.
Yeah.
So we actually have a cliffhanger at the end of Lower Decks season two.
And I think that's what I like so much about the show is that it's a funny show, it's a comedy show, but there's also some meat to it. There's something on those bones.
Yeah.
That shows you that these are, even though it is a lighthearted story, there are friendships here and there are relationships here and these are genuine people. And I dig that about it. I think it's a nice mix. Star Trek has always struggled to be funny. You know, the Next Generation never did it well. I do feel like Deep Space Nine was pretty good at it, but you know, the comedy in Deep Space Nine came from the characters, and that's what Lower Decks does. You know, it's not somebody telling a joke, it is a funny situation with characters that you can predict how they're going to respond. And you know, it's fun to see the characters that you like, you know, put in new situations and you know how they're going to respond to it, and that's where the comedy comes from, and I just very much enjoy it.
And they did so much good stuff. You know, they had so many. One, the love of Star Trek is on its sleeve.
Oh, absolutely.
Even more, you know, even more so than Orville, which is, you know, I know I compare it to that because it's basically, a similar sensibility.
They're cut from the same cloth, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
But the Easter eggs, just nonstop.
Yeah,
nonstop.
I loved the skeleton of Giant Spock from Infinite Vulcan, the original series. The original animated series show. I was just like, I was kind of hoping we'd meet, you know, Giant Spock in Lower Decks. I didn't realize that we were going to see his corpse.
Every episode is just flush with Easter eggs. I really, out of the shows that are on Paramount Plus, this is my favorite.
Yeah.
Like, not even by a little. This is my favorite by far, which is funny to say, you know, because the others are serious Star Trek, and Discovery Season 4 is coming, and I'm looking forward to Strange New Worlds. But I know that I will not enjoy, and this is a hard thing to say, but I know I will not enjoy Discovery Season 4 and Picard Season 2 anywhere near as much as I enjoyed Lower Decks Season 2.
That is a true statement for both of us.
Yeah.
I am looking forward to Star Trek Discovery, but I'm really struggling with the far future space that we're in, and how Burnham and her crew are, you know, exemplary in a world where they're so far out of time, you know, where it seems like everybody else should be more advanced than them. You know,
especially because the future is more advanced, right? They're not in an apocalyptic future. Like, yes, okay, Starfleet had the burn and, you know, had to consolidate, but they still have basically like living technology. They still have advanced technology in a way far beyond the original series timeline where the Discovery crew comes from. And so, you know, I struggle with that for sure.
Same.
And I feel like I have struggled with the cast dynamics.
Well, there's too many of them.
Yeah.
You know, we have too many primary characters in the show. I really feel like we need to lose some of them, and I want to be able to choose the ones we lose.
Well, and they're progressing in a way that is not two things for me. And we don't want to end the show on a bad note, but they're progressing in a way that, one, doesn't feel organic. The character dynamics don't feel, you know, like it's been organic. It feels like we've kind of got this forced tension between characters. And two, by season four, like we are progressing the character dynamics in a way that people are growing apart rather than growing together.
Right.
You know, and I feel like by season four, we want them to be your next generation crew. We want the camaraderie. We want to see them having a drink, hanging out in the promenade, not the promenade, you know, hanging out at the, you know, the ship bar or whatever, in the same way we saw in Next Generation and Deep Space Nine, and hell, even in Lower Decks season two, you know, you see those characters, you know, having a meal in the mess hall. I don't like that. That doesn't feel like that's the way Discovery is progressing. It feels like the animosity between the crew and tension between the crew is growing rather than the camaraderie.
Right.
But I could be wrong. We'll see. Discovery season four starts this Thursday.
Yeah, I am. I'm looking forward to watching it. I will, watch it the night of. I'm hopeful that they do some things that surprise me in season four. And that's all I'll say on that. I like yourself, I am less excited about Disco and Picard than I was about Lower Decks. But I got to tell you, the thing that I'm so looking forward to is Strange New Worlds. I cannot wait for Strange New Worlds. But, you know, I am hopeful that they surprise me. I'm hopeful that I, you know, enjoy Disco more than I think I'm going to. And my big thing here is that I just don't know that I care for the setting. I enjoyed last season, but I think I'd have been happier last season if they'd figured out a way to return them to where they're from. But since Strange New Worlds is going to be telling the stories of where they're from, maybe I guess that's the reason why we don't do that. So we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah.
Anyway. Well, hey, we want to know what you thought about all the things because, you know, it's been a while and we talked about a lot today. Give us a call, 972-763-5903. That number once again, 972-763-5903. And if we use your voicemail on the show, you could win a coveted, valuable Ideology of Madness surprise.
You can also hit us up on social media, IOM Geek on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter.
What a deal. Well, hey, Paul, I am marginally looking forward to the season premiere of Disco this week. We will get together shortly thereafter and talk about that.
Absolutely. We'll talk to you guys then.
Bye.
Star Trek with Aaron and Polly is a production of IOMGeek.com. Have a question or comment? Hailing frequencies are open at 972-763-5903. Tribble wrangling provided by Triskelion Trays, no troublesome tribbles. Mr. Aponte's wardrobe provided courtesy of Garrick's Clothiers, conveniently located on the promenade.